It's not a cartoon. It's anime.
Ah, yes. Brennan's stupid ass face. Let's be descriptive about his goofy ass face. Just he looked like he was screaming for his life, like, help!
About to eat his camera. That thing was right
at
his
face. It's been a while, man. I had to put a little extra in. I've been gone for 2 weeks, so, you know, I got to make it up.
It's true.
Yeah. I mean, you actually didn't give us a heads up for the other week. You just said, Anyways, welcome to another episode of Animation. Oh, shit.
Oh, you all right, bro?
It's smoky out here. All right? It's the fires, man.
I feel like, if y'all don't know, Keenan is normally a bald man. And as we speak, he's wearing a hairpiece. I personally believe this hairpiece has brought him back to puberty, thus his voice cracking.
Puberty.
This man is going through voice cracking again. He's about to have acne in the next. Y'all wait for it. I'm predicting he will have acne.
Don't wish acne on me.
I'm predicting it. I'm not wishing it. I'm predicting it. There's a big difference. I hope you'd never have acne again in your life. But with that hairpiece, it's coming.
Damn, that's a hell of a prediction.
Well, screw you. Out the gate, the squad is back. Somewhat. Myself, Brennan. Yo. Rob, no ice today.
No ice.
Brennan's finally back. It's been a while. It's been a while.
It has been a while, man. I miss y'all. How's everybody doing? Y'all good?
Great.
Yeah, man.
I felt respected in my absence. I've listened to the episodes. I only got called bitch like twice.
That's a pretty good ratio.
Like,
yeah.
It's not bad. Like, compared to when I'm normally gone, like y'all normally go in. I think I also attribute that to one of those episodes, Ice wasn't there. So, you know, normally a lot of it comes from him. Mm. So.
That's fair.
I feel good. Thank you, guys. I just say thank you. I've been doing it, holding it down. I appreciate you.
Your arch nemesis, Ice.
You mean he aspires to be?
He aspires to be your arch nemesis.
He ain't quite there.
Well, you know what we do here, man. We review anime, animation. We talk. We do one-off debates. We ask questions. We ask the hard-hitting questions about anime, about why shit is going on, and why are some of the dumbest characters in some of these shows. We're going to continue. Can we just not? No,
I was going to
say something else.
Okay. Well, you know what I'm talking about. Like, I don't even want to say why I'm saying it. I just want to say, Can we just not?
No, I was going to say, I want to give a really, 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 really big shout out to Transit Pictures, which, you know, the company that, Brennan and Rob, you know, own, work
together at Transit Pictures.
Transit Pictures is their company, along with a lot of other people that we work with. They put out and produce and film an extremely dope stand-up comedy special.
Keenan kills it. Y'all need to pick this up right now, because Keenan's being like super humble and whatever, but like, you know, I'm gonna keep it all the way 100 with y'all, all right? I've known Keenan for a really long time. I was with Keenan when we filmed, Keenan opened for Tony Baker, for Tony Baker's first comedy special. And so I had seen Keenan perform before that and all that. And I'm gonna keep it all the way real. I wasn't the biggest Keenan Baker fan. I'm not just saying this to like throw shade on Keenan. Keenan knows all the things I'm about to say. I've said them all to him.
We had the discussion.
Yeah. It's true. But I will say that the growth I have seen through the consistency and hard work in this brother right here is without question evident on this piece that he's talking about right now, because this dude is absolutely hilarious.
It's so funny.
Everybody's hilarious.
It's so funny.
Keenan goes in.
He does.
Y'all need to see it, because I give y'all 2 weeks. Y'all got 2 weeks before we start using Keenan Baker references on this show. And we're not even gonna give context. We're just gonna use references and keep it moving. So y'all need to go get it. It's called Tony Baker and Friends, Volume 1. It's on Gumroad. It's in Tony Baker's link on Instagram. I think Keenan actually has it up as well.
It's on my link also.
Exactly. If you go to their Instagram, just in the link in their bio, I highly recommend it. Like, it's funny through and through, but because you know this brother right here and you support him outside of this ridiculous hairpiece he has on right now, Like, this junk, he is legit funny. Like, legit funny. And I don't say, I still don't like Keenan. I love Keenan, but I don't like Keenan. So I'm not saying this to make him feel good. I'm just saying the truth. Because if I didn't like what he was doing, then I just wouldn't be saying anything right now. But I'm giving him props for it.
Brandon would have been like, hey, it's an overall good special with some good comedians.
Yeah, that's what I would have said.
Would have kept it to a minimum.
He would have bypassed. But, I mean, yeah, I always feel weird taking compliments. But I feel like... the special, I thought the special was amazing. We watched it last night, me and my lady, and she raved about visually. She's just like, God damn, like Transit Pictures is one of the best like filming companies that she like that's out there. She was just like, this looks way better than what's on, even on a lot of these places like Netflix and Amazon and stuff like that, because these guys do such a great job. Sounds amazing. I will say this as comedians, we put our foot in that shit, man. I feel very proud of
that.
I watched it. It's very hard for me to watch something that I'm involved with a lot of times and laugh, because I was there one and I'm always critiquing and being like, I could have did this, but I was just like, damn, this is fun to watch. So make sure, yes, you go pick that up. It's in the link in my bio. It's in the link in Tony Baker's bio. And I guarantee you won't be disappointed, man. You're going to like somebody on there.
No, I guarantee. I fully agree with that statement. Like, there's no way, unless you don't have a soul or don't have a sense of humor, I truly don't understand how you're not. I'm gonna say further than this. It's not gonna be like you don't like someone. You're guaranteed to like at least two people on that comedy show. I guarantee that.
Like, I guarantee that too. Yes.
Like, there are some funny dudes on that show. So like, it's legit.
Yes, sir.
All right, commercial over.
Yeah. Appreciate it. But yeah, we're continuing Death Note episodes with 25 through 30.
I forgot how much of a haul it is to watch six episodes. Like,
it's a lot, dude. It's a lot of episodes. I was just talking about this week, just like, God damn, this is a lot of episodes. Holy shit.
Man, we should be mad at whoever picked this show, you know?
Man, I mean, you guys wanted this. This was your wish, not mine. Like,
we wanted this picking that, remembering that it was like 25 something
episodes.
Yeah,
I thought it was like 24 episodes. I really did.
Oof. God damn.
But yeah, we're continuing Death Note. This is next week will be the last week.
Right? Next week's the last week. And that's going to be a seven episode haul. That one's going to be our second longest ever. The only other time we did more than that was we did like the end of Demon Slayer season one. We did like eight episodes that one time. That was nuts.
We did?
Yeah, I think we did that. We did that with Keith.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But Demon Slayer.
Hey, it was bingeable. Absolutely bingeable.
But Demon Slayer.
Absolutely. Okay, well. Yeah, Rob, go ahead and jump into it. Episode 25.
Let's get to it, because there's a lot to cover. Holy shit. All right, episode 25.
It goes down.
Whew. Yeah, I was like, this is when I was hard. Like, how do I just, like, breeze over so much of this? But
bruh, I was thinking about you. I was like, whoa. Actually, one last thing before we get into it. I want to say that I did not rewatch the last two series of episodes that you guys, I listened to the podcast, but I didn't rewatch it. Rob, your recaps are fantastic.
I'm glad they're helping out.
Yo, yeah. I was like, you put me there. I was like, yo, Rob is good at this. So please, go ahead, bro. No pressure.
Sit back, you know, relax and get ready to be transported. Episode 25, we open on a quick montage of images from Elle's childhood. And there's not a ton that we actually see clearly, but we do see Watari leading him as a child up to the gates of this orphanage named Whammy's House, which we'll hear a lot more about that place and the people that are there later on. Back in present day, L has his back against the wall solving the Kira case. He's trying to get more info from Rem on like how the Death Note works and how, like, are some of these rules the same? And she's not giving him any information. She's like holding down like to the plan, like not giving this guy shit. And Light is just watching from a distance. L clearly can sense that the walls are closing in on him. This dude is watching him like a hawk. Elsewhere, Misa is working as the current Kira, doing Light's bidding, bringing about judgment down on criminals. And the team starts to panic about these new killings. And L's wheels are spinning about, you know, tearing pages out of the Death Note. And does it still work like that? Does this 13-day rule, is that even real? And Light asks if they, you know, really be able to convict Kira based on what they have. And L's like, no, like, we will at least get them life in prison, if not the death penalty. And that actually makes something click for Rem. And she realizes Light's diabolical plan. He's trying to force her hand to make her save Misa by killing L and thereby dooming her as well for saving somebody else's lifespan. Light.
Sick. fuck.
Just 4D chess at this point. Sick fuck, absolutely. Later, Light finds L on the rooftop in the rain. L can, like, hear bells tolling, you know, don't ask for who the bells toll, you know, that kind of thing. Light can't hear it. And, you know, they're talking to each other. And at that point, L, like, straight up asks Light, like, have you ever told the truth once in your life? And Light just gives that shitty boilerplate answer about, like, you know, white lies here and there, you know. And they head inside and, you know, L offers to clean Light's feet in the show of, like, defeat and supplication.
That scene was so uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of symbolism going on here. You know, I think is like even like out of reverence and reflecting on Light's ascension to godhood. Like, didn't Jesus get his feet washed by people? Like this is absolutely, I think, you know, L kind of being like, okay, I'm admitting defeat. And he even tells L, or even tells Light that, like, hey, our time of parting is near. Like, basically kind of telling him he won. Like, he got to that godhood status in a way. Back in the Situation Room, L reveals his next plan. He wants to test out the 13-day rule by having a death row inmate write the name of another death row inmate, you know, just see what happens. Honestly, that could solve the case once and for all. But in that moment, that's when disaster strikes. Rem writes Watari's name in the death note, but right before he dies, he deletes all the data files off the computer. L collapses shortly after, and Light's holding him in his arms as he dies, you know, and gives him that smile, you know, up into that final moment.
I love that smile, the animation.
That smile.
When they switched to him being so evil, I love it. Oof.
I really honestly was just like, oh, he's going to be sad when he dies. I don't know why I thought that.
No, nah, man, he's living for this moment. L collapses and, you know, he's holding him in that final moment. And, you know, after L goes, you know, Light turns around and he's of course puts on a show for everybody after that, you know, and Rem, you know, has turned into a pile of ash for saving Misa. Light rushes there and grabs her death note out of the pile before everybody else can arrive.
Sand.
Yeah. Cause everything there is sand. But when the rest arrive, he vows to take up the mantle of L and bring Kira to justice. And that's how we end episode 25, 26. We begin with sort of a short recap, you know, recap episode, it felt like at first. I almost skipped the whole thing.
Yeah, I almost did too, to be honest.
But yeah, the first half of it is basically just recap of L kind of running through all the evidence he had about, you know, the Kira case and who he thinks it was. But it turns out to be a message that's being sent to somebody somewhere. At HQ, the team reads about Watari in the paper. Turns out he was like this famous inventor that, you know, kind of used his money to help orphans in need. Nothing was written about L, however. They've decided to cover up his death and just let Light continue to use his name so that people don't panic and think the cure is won. Light finds that things aren't as fun without L around. You know, his co-investigators pretty much buy anything he's trying to sell them. You know, they're not quite as quick on the draw. They all decide to hide the death note and, you know, continue their investigation in Light's new apartment he'll be moving into with Misa, which she's super happy about.
Of course.
But Ryuk is complaining things aren't going to be interesting anymore. But Light's like, that's not true at all. This is the time, you know, we create our new world. And he just goes to work with the Death Note, covering all his tracks, killing criminals, killing the master thief and the con man that played Coil, all the remaining members and the board from the Yatsuba group, everybody that kind of knew about the Death Note, you know, that he can get away with killing, he does so. And at the Whammy House, you know, we're back at the orphanage. We find that they were the recipient of L's last message. And now his true successor will take over for him. And at the beginning of the next episode, we meet these two children that were supposed to be those candidates to be the next L. You know, one is this moody, impetuous boy named Mello, and then the other is this calm, aloof child named Nier. Like, basically,
who seems just like L,
just with white hair, pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, they actually both kind of took on pieces of L, which is pretty cool. I think he's weird looking and with the hair, but then Mello does, he loves eating candy just like L does.
Oh my God, where's he get all those chocolate bars, dude?
So many chocolate bars, like Willy Wonka shit, too.
Yeah. But they don't get along. Like, these two are basically opposites, you know, and Mello eventually marches out and basically tells Nier, like, you can be the next L. But they both intend to keep looking for Kira. And we get a time jump here for 5 years. Nier is working with
I didn't really realize that that time jump was like, I was like, oh, wait, you know, like, we're going. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's a significant jump in time. And we see during that time, you know, Nero started working with the American government, working with the FBI and the CIA to create this organization called the Special Provision for Kira, or the SPK. So, and so far, it seems to be basically, like you were saying, an exact duplicate of L. Like, there, I mean, he definitely, Mello definitely has some qualities too, but Nier has his, like, disposition in a lot of ways. At the Yagami household, the team is still having meetings on how to catch Kira, all while Ryuk is just watching on cackling. Suddenly, they're actually called away as a deputy director has been kidnapped, and the kidnappers are demanding the Death Note in return for his life. And Light is shook by this, since they all swore to secrecy regarding the Death Note. Nobody outside of them should know about it. And later, an FBI shows up, agent shows up that's part of the SPK, and basically tells Yagami that, hey, the Japanese police have been useless. Give us the Death Note because we're taking over. And he snaps at first, thinking like, you guys, you know, kidnap the director. But it turns out SPK, they're not behind it. And actually, it's Mello with the help of a bunch of like mafiosos and gangsters and a shit ton of chocolate bars. You know, they did the kidnapping, and he's made some unsavory friends over the last 5 years to help him beat Nier in the Kira case. And he's had, his big theory is that there's at least two Death Notes out there. Light, however, has other plans and uses the Death Note to kill the make the director kill himself. But Mello's not fazed by that, you know, comes up with a plan to kidnap Sayu, his Light's sister, because obviously she's the daughter of the lead investigator. And as the team is looking into the SPK, they get a call from Mello telling him, hey, I already have Sayu. And if Yagami, if you want your daughter back, you'll bring the Death Note to them in L.A. So they're coming to our neck of the woods.
Really good chess moves so far by Mello.
He's making moves. He's got the aggressive Mello tendencies. Yeah. Of L.
I say Mello is a very, very good pseudo antagonist.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Nier, meanwhile, hears about the killing of the director, immediately suspects Kira. But, you know, Mello's somehow involved in this. But he's like, you know, we can't just guarantee that the kidnappers killed him. He's been having his team searching for him as well. Soon they get a call from Light pretending to be L. And Nier calls him out on his game immediately. He's like, we know the real L is dead. You know, SPK was formed specifically to keep you out of the loop. And he introduces himself as N, and, you know, obviously, you know, an allusion there to the original L. And Light realizes, you know, he's not out of L's shadow yet. So although they have differences, N and the SPK agree to help Light out and his team to get Sayu back. Light's team's taking the lead. Light and Misa pack up for the trip to the U.S. And Light wonders, like, hey, I might have to kill my sister here to maintain my freedom. As the team flies to the States, Mello's team makes contact with Yagami and direct him towards another plane, which is hijacked. And they bring him out, basically, into the middle of the desert and drop him off. And
this plan, I just want to like, what do you do? What do you do? You give them the book. That's what you do. But please, go on.
This is some Ocean's 11 shit. Like, they were pulling this shit off, like, with, you know, without a hitch. He gets unloaded basically into the middle of the desert. You know, they show they have this underground bunker. And there, Mello has one of his men waiting down there with a face mask, you know, ready to handle this transaction with these, like, bulletproof revolving doors. But they test the notebook out on one of their less than loyal members to verify it's the real deal. And satisfied, they give Sayu to Yagami. And then Mello's crew pulls a bait and switch. Like, all of a sudden, they've been watching, you know, SPK and Light. They've been watching this whole thing go down via satellite. And they watch his helicopter take off with the masked man inside. But at the same time, a missile also comes out of the ground and launches, and they kind of watch in horror as the helicopter explodes, killing the dude inside. And the missile, which has to be loaded with the Death Note, just flies off their radar way too fast to be tracked. And Mello, of course, knows where it's going, gets his hand on the Death Note, and then he just wastes no time getting to work and taking down most of the SPK, but leaving N alive. So N reaches out to Light at that point and is just like, listen, we both got fooled here. We both kind of fucked up. We got to work together if we're going to beat Mello.
The funny thing is, though, I don't know what they could have done. Like, really looking at that plan, like, oh, we both got fooled here, is like, what, like, that plan was really good. Like,
And he kind of says that because he's just like, oh, like, you got tricked. And Light's like, well, what was I supposed to do? And he's like, hey, man, nothing. We just both, like,
I just got to acknowledge that you got tricked, but this I would do the same thing pretty much.
Yeah, I was like, I don't like I don't know what to tell you, bro. Like, because I mean, normally, you know, L would have been like, yo, like, if I had another answer, you shouldn't have done that. I gave him a fake one with just maybe one page in it. Like, there's no answer to this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
it was a tough one. It was a good plan from Mello. In the Shinigami realm, though, the rightful owner of Light's original Death Note, this guy named Sito, finds out Ryuk went to the human realm with his Death Note, and he's like, I gotta go there myself to get it back. So we're about to see this guy get involved as well. Sayu is safe from her kidnapping, but seems to be super changed mentally. Like, her mom and dad are taking care of her while she, like, silently rides around in a wheelchair. She seems totally shaken from this whole thing, like, mentally changed. Back in the States.
Which is so sad.
It is sad. Yeah. What we see happen here is, ugh.
Like I risked all of our lives and killed all those people to save you, and this is how you respond, huh?
Yeah, it's bad. Back in the States, Ryuk gets a visit from Sito, basically saying, give me back my Death Note, dude. And Ryuk's like, hey, I don't know where it is, all right? I lost it somewhere. Like, you know, if you want to find it, you're going to have to find out wherever this dude Mello is. Light's team is doing some digging into Mello and Nier and find out about the Whammy House and their history with L. Misa uses her Shinigami eyes to kind of figure out which of the Mafia members is currently holding the Death Note, you know, which one, whoever's lifespan she can't see. And then Light uses that Death Note to get him to send them a letter before, I guess, he dies, you know, giving them Mello's location. And then he does some more switcheroos with the ownership of the Death Note, switching it up. Like, he gives ownership of his Death Note to Ryuk, saying, like, hey, follow the new owner. Tells Misa, listen, you got to be Kira for a while. I'm going to hold on to this Death Note. It's not mine, but I'm keeping it against my body so that, like, I can keep my memories. It's more Light bullshit. Sito,
it's not bullshit. That's brilliant.
It's
I mean, it worked out. It's just, It's a lot. As the person that's got to break it down, I'm just like, God damn it. Like, it can't be simple for, like, for once.
Light is so much of a mastermind, and Rob's just like, I don't give a, like, fuck, you're making this difficult for me.
How am I supposed to break this down simply? But Sito is spying on Light and Misa and sees Mello's address and basically goes to retrieve his Death Note immediately, reveals himself to the team in exchange for some chocolate, tells him, like, hey, yeah, those rules, those are fake. Like, and that's, make some shit click in Mello's head as well about, like, maybe some people that Light or that L thought were innocent, you know, maybe there's some room there. So,
yeah.
Meanwhile, Misa calls Yagami as Kira and says, like, hey, I'm giving you Mello's address. I'm also giving you my notebook, my Death Note, and says, like, hey, you're going to get the Shinigami eyes, all that. Kira says, they've already written the name of all these gangsters in the notebook. Like, it's done. It's happening. They're going to die. There's no one doing it, but gives him the specific date and time and the location it's going to happen. So Light, of course, reluctantly, air quotes, agrees to go with Kira's plan. And the team is finally introduced to Ryuk. And they go to raid Mello's hideout on the day that, you know, this is all going to go down. Yagami volunteers to take the Death Note, even agrees to take the Shinigami eyes so they can tell, you know, when the gangsters are dying, you know, once their names and lifespans disappear.
I wouldn't let my dad do that. But I'm not.
But
I'm
you're not,
not fucking,
a piece of fucking garbage like Light Yagami.
He doesn't give a fuck, bro. He doesn't give a fuck.
No, dude. He's because at this point he even looks at the mirror. And, you know, he's worried. Like, hey, my dad like writes somebody's name in this thing, and then in 13 days, if he doesn't die, like that's going to be a problem for me. Like, he basically looks himself in the mirror and is just like, I'm going to have to kill my dad in 2 weeks. You know. Night of the operation comes, and the team waits outside as the gangsters are dying. They rush in looking for Mello and the Death Note. Seeing he's been outsmarted here, Mello just bails. He runs, leaves the Death Note behind, but Yagami continues after him. And Yagami speaks his true name, and which Light gets, but refuses to write his name in the Death Note, you know, much to Light's chagrin.
This whole thing would have been...
Yeah. They have their standoff. One of Mello's surviving men shoots Yagami, you know, just lights him up, and Mello triggers an explosion, bringing down the building and escaping. Later at the hospital, Light uses his father's last moments to beg him to kill Mello, you know, but he won't do it. Instead, he notices, oh, this killed me. He can see Light's lifespan since he gave up control of his Death Note and dies happily thinking there's no way his son could be Kira.
Man. Ugh,
brutal. Light cries
that,
out.
That death scene was actually pretty sad to me.
That was pretty sad.
I actually like it, Yagami. I think he's like a good dude. Like,
he is. Know, he's the one good anime dad we've had so far, and he's wasted on a trash ass son. It's like the dynamic is
anime dad.
Absolutely flipped.
That's the only way you can have a good anime dad if you have a horrible piece of shit child.
Well, honestly, let's wait. Hold on a second, guys. Don't go that far. Like, he's good in what we've seen, but you also have to remember he's the one who raised him.
It's true, man.
He's the one who raised his child.
And this, actually didn't probably raise him that much because he's always working.
So is he really a good dad?
That's, I was about to just say that.
Is he really a good dad?
Maybe.
So I just want to point that out. Now that his son is working with him, he seems like a good dad.
Yeah.
But I don't think he gave a shit about his son. He didn't give a shit about his son.
I don't think that's true. I don't think he didn't give a shit about
him. Think about the early episodes. He didn't even talk to him. He didn't even talk to his son.
He's on the number one biggest case in the world at that time.
I don't think that he didn't give a shit about his son. But what I think what it is, as most fathers especially, they think work means you're a great parent. And it doesn't. So I think that's how he viewed it. Was just like, I'm neglecting my family and I'm fine because I'm doing what's right. I'm saving our city. I'm saving our country or whatever. And I'm providing and putting food on the table.
I just also realized it's something we skipped over earlier when like Matsuda is hitting on his daughter and he's just like, yo, my daughter's not marrying a cop. Like, I'll tell you that right now. Like, yeah. And even his wife is just like, yeah, no, that's never happening.
Not happening.
So even they know, like, clearly he hasn't been around a ton, but,
So is he really that good? He's the best anime father we've seen. I agree with that.
100%.
But is he a good father in general? There's room for improvement.
Room for improvement.
Right.
Absolutely.
Always room for improvement.
I'm just not gonna let you just paint him as a great father. I'm like, nah. I'm not saying 10 out of 10,
but like, listen, on the scale we're dealing with, this guy is like clearly the pick of the litter.
I'm not gonna argue with any of that.
It's him and the new Endeavor. Yeah. The new Endeavor getting up there.
The new endeavor.
Oh man,
that's real.
He's got a long way back.
Prominence. Burn.
I'm not ready to forgive that man yet. So Light at this point is crying over his dad, but let's be honest, he's probably more crying for himself than for his dad. He gives Sito the Death Note back, and you know, he just takes off with the original Death Note that we met.
I have a question about that scene. Were the communications cut off between Light and his dad while he was negotiating with Mello when he saw his name?
No, I don't think so. Name.
So why does his dad have to be the one to write it? Because he spelled the name out clearly on the walkie line. Like, mm-hmm. Anybody could write in his name.
Because he hasn't seen his face.
Oh, okay, got it.
All they've seen is sketches, which is like, you know,
yeah. Can't really go off of.
Yeah. So in this last episode, N plays with his toys and discusses his theories with his remaining team members, the few that they are on the SBK. His most recent theory is that whoever is currently pretending to be L is Kira. In the montage, we see how the world has changed. You know, people praying to Kira, threatening to put, hey, I'll put your name online. You know, criminals begging not to have their identities published for fear of dying. Even that TV producer from Sakura TV is cashing in on this, pretending to be the voice of Kira, like some kind of Alex Jones type dude. We also see what this has done to Light's family. You know, his mom sitting alone in her home, you know, her family torn apart at this point, totally by herself. Soon, the American government announces we're out. Like, we're not pursuing Kira anymore. Light's team is also talking about whether they should accept Kira after all. But eventually they all vow to keep the investigation going. Later, a scarred Mello, looking like Zuko out of Avatar, shows up at the SPK HQ, demanding N hand over the picture of his face. You know, guns drawn. He's got his weapons out. N agrees to hand it over. It's just like, hey, you know, we're good here. And in return, Mello gives him some info that he's learned about the Shinigami, and also that some of these rules that we think are real are fake. N quickly figures out that the 13-day rule, at the very minimum, that one is not real. He calls up Light and his team and kind of tells them about the interaction, changing some of the details, saying like, oh yeah, he escaped, but you know, that dude just walked out of there a free man. But he does get Light to quote unquote figure out that the 13-day rule is a fake. And he also reaches out to the team saying like, hey guys, Kira is probably a part of your team. And that Ryuk is lying to protect that man. And he tells the team like, if the current L was ever suspected of being Kira, reach out to me. Like, call me morning, you know, noon, night, anytime. Like, I'll be there on the other side. And the team starts to wonder, maybe Light can't be trusted after all. But at that point, U.S. President, you know, gets a call from Kira demanding that, you know, he formally disband the SPK and give all the SPK over to the Sakura TV host. And a few days later, that host is in a helicopter outside the HQ of the SPK, broadcasting their location and who's in there and what they're doing. And an angry mob of Kira supporters rush the building.
Wow.
In Japan, Misa's watching the TV, hoping to get a glimpse of N, you know, on his way out the building to get his name and kill him. And Light calls him up with this shit-eating grin on his face, gloating, like, hey, man, you need some help? What are you going to do next? And that's exactly where we leave off, is N is trying to figure out just what the fuck he's going to do to get out of this situation.
God damn.
Man, this show is good, bro. Like, it's just like, how are we going to keep this going? Like, this, all these episodes, what's going to happen? And they're just like, oh, my God. Okay, wow. Like,
so that was one of my questions. Do you guys feel that they were going to be able to keep up afterwards?
Yes. Of course. How many times have we had this exact same conversation? Where it's just like, I don't know where they're going to go from here. Like, it's like, oh, it's like,
well, let's go into Rob's question. Okay. One, were you surprised by L's death? And how do you feel about the introduction of these new characters in this final stretch, Rob?
I was really surprised, and I was hurt because L had become my favorite character on the show. Like, I love L. He was great. I liked watching him, you know, try to figure things out. And, you know, he was, for as much as he, you know, Light did a good job of covering his tracks in the paper trail, L had him figured out. Like, he knew what was going on, but he just couldn't prove it, like, to the point where that's why he needed that evidence. So I was super surprised by that, to see that go down. Light pulled off some diabolical shit. These new characters, you know, I like N, you know, obviously because he's similar to L, but I really would have liked to have seen L have his day where, you know, he got to, you know, put the cuffs on Light and bring him in. If I had it my way, that's how it would have gone. These characters still have a little bit more to do, I think, to win me over. I think Mello goes, he takes like L's sweet, like addiction to candy to like a whole nother level. They keep doing that shot of him like cracking into that like Kit Kat bar or whatever the fuck he's eating. So I'm a little bummed to not see L make it to the end. You know, definitely a dramatic twist, but I would have liked to have seen L, you know, be the one that got the win.
Man, it's funny because like Brennan and I both have seen this. So
true.
I guess I got to give two kind of answers to this. When I first saw this anime and this happened, I was in complete shock. I knew L had this in the bag. And then when that happened, I remember being like, being like, fuck, he lost.
Yeah.
And I was like, they're going to actually have the antagonist win this, which is like, it's a weird feeling because like, it's like, we get into that question later about is he doing the right thing or not. But it's just like, yo, I was just completely in shock. So now when I was rewatching it, I was just like, yo, because now we really wanted to see Rob's reaction to this anime. Yeah. So I was like, how is Rob going to react when L dies? That was all I was thinking from like this
whole
anime.
I've been thinking this
since episode one. How is he going to react? Because I already knew you were going to like L. I already knew you were going to be more attached to L than Light.
Yeah.
I was like, man, when L dies, what the fuck is Rob? What is he going to feel? Like, what is going to be?
I was just like, bro, what the fuck? Like, oh, man, when Rem cracked open the book and started writing, I was just like, fuck, dude. Fuck. You know, I was like, maybe she'll just let it happen. Maybe she'll realize Misa's not worth it. Get you somebody that's going to love you back. Killed me, man.
Somebody's going to love you back. I mean, honestly, like, it's like, it's for me, it's a toss-up right now. And the biggest reason is because I really like Mello. I think what they did is they took one character, L, and just split him into two.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? It's like one of them is like Light. I mean, one of them is like L without a conscience, and the other one is almost a carbon copy of L. You know? Mm-hmm. So it's like we still have L because the other kid is pretty much L. Right?
Pretty
much. We still got him. Like, we didn't really lose him at all. Like, I mean, in all honesty, outside of the previous relationships that L had developed through the show, like, I truly can't tell the difference between this character and L. So for me, I'm like, he's not lost. We're still there. And then Mello, but we also gained Mello. You know what I'm saying? Right. But I also really value those relationships that L had, specifically with Light, because of that the rivalry and camaraderie. I was really sad to see him go just simply because, man, fuck Light. That's why.
Yeah.
Because fuck Light.
Fuck Light.
Fuck Light. So that's my answer, is that I feel like it's a wash, but fuck Light.
Well, what, you answer the first question.
What's the first question?
Were you when you first watched Death Note? How mm-hmm. how surprised were you about LJ?
I was surprised as shit. I never saw that coming. I was like, there's no way. Like, he's like the reason that the show is good. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You know, he's the whole reason. Like, I think Light is a hell of an interesting character. I don't like him, but he's extremely interesting.
Yeah.
But he's not. His interest doesn't matter. Like, how interesting he is doesn't matter if there's nobody that can rival him. And there's nobody that can make, you know, like, it's like, he's just, if this whole show is just about him dominating everybody in the world because he's that much smarter than them, then it's not a good show.
Right.
It's boring. Like, L is what made the show good, because L is just like, I'm literally right there, step for step with you on everything, just like Rob said. And he knew, you know, like, we know he knew, you know, he knew.
He had it.
But he just couldn't prove it. He's like, I can't prove it, so what I'm going to do, you know?
Yeah.
If honestly, if I'm L, and maybe because everybody's morals are different, I would have just killed Light.
Right?
I would have just killed him. If I knew, I know he's a god, man, all right, I'm out of here anyways. Beast is going to probably write, I mean, Rem's going to write my name in this death book, in his death note.
Yeah.
I'm going to die anyways. Well, I'm taking this motherfucker with me. I'll take that. But I understand L has this moral, like, he takes pride in having to solve the case and win the case that
way. He's got
to
do it the right way.
I understand that. And I actually love, I don't think I answered the question about lacking Mello and Nier. I like that they came in because, like you said, they need that balance. They need somebody. And bringing these two in to be, like, the way they are.
Oh, man.
I thought it was beautiful. And they're not going to be in it for, like, another 20 episodes. If they would have done, like, a season two with them, I'd be like, all right, you're stretching this shit.
Yeah.
But the fact that they brought him in is like, all right, this thing has to close out in the next 5 to 6 episodes, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's going to be great.
I agree.
So, next question. With all this stuff going on about how, like, pretty much everybody in the world now is kind of like, a lot of people are on Kira's side. Do you think parents will kind of, like, use Kira as a form of fear, like Santa Claus, the naughty or niceless type thing? Yo, if you're bad, because, you know, people saying, like, the whole, I'll write your name on the internet, you keep fucking up. Do you think that actually checks people, and do you think the crime rate actually goes down, or do you think there just needs to be crime? That's how life is. So, one, do you think parents or people will use that as, like, a Santa Claus kind of, like, naughty or niceless thing? And then two,
go back in the tape.
But I'll just answer and you guys go from there. I definitely
that's the hair, y'all. That's the hair.
It's the hair, bro. The hair is fucking up my brain. I'm taking it off today. I definitely think that they would use him to, like, check, like, parents would use him to check their children and being like, you know, if you don't get these things done, if you don't get good grades, or if you want to go out there and smoke weed, well, you know who's gonna get you? Kira's gonna get you. And they would use that shit to check their kids. And I think it would work because this motherfucker has proven to actually kill people. This ain't like Santa Claus where you say that shit and your parents still might get you a gift or two. Or you find, like, oh, Santa Claus isn't real. It's like, this nigga's real. And he kills people the way he wants to kill them. He doesn't care. And I feel like even with criminals, so this is the second part of the question. I do think the crime rate will drop. And I think there will be just a different type of fear. I just think that criminals, they're not going to take that risk if they know their name's going to be put on the internet, or they would do stuff in so much secrecy. You can't talk to anybody anymore. If you're going to commit a crime, you got to do it solo. There ain't no teams out here, because somebody can always snitch you out, and then that's a wrap for you.
Yeah.
Rob?
Yeah, I agree. Parents would 100% do that. Like, oh, yeah, all the bad kids wind up on Kira's list or whatever. Like, oh, yeah, you keep misbehaving. Like, oh, yeah, you're going to become, like, a criminal, and then Kira's going to find out about you and write down your name. Yeah, absolutely. I think parents would do that.
Parents ain't shit, that's why.
You know, kids ain't shit either. Like,
clearly, in this game. Yeah. You're right.
Sometimes there might be some kids that actually deserve that shit. But as far as crime, yeah, I think it's definitely got to go down, right? Like, I think they even mentioned in the show, like, that it's at an all-time low. But I think it's still going to happen. Like, it's still going to be going on. You're right. It's just going to be, like, even more in the shadows. You're going to have people that are desperate enough to do something. Because what Light is doing is, you know, he in all that he's doing with the Death Note, all he's really doing is attacking a symptom rather than actually working to fix the causes of what causes people to commit crimes. And so there's always going to be people that are struggling and are desperate and are going to need to like steal and commit crimes to like do things to help.
Feel that they need to.
Yeah, yes. That feel they need to help to survive. And I think that's why you still have people that are, you know, being arrested and just like screaming, you know, don't put my name out there, like, you know, for whatever. That being said, I know Light tries to just punish like the worst of the worst, people that are unrepentant. You know, from what I understand, he tried to just be like, I'm going to go after the true monsters of society. But there have been times he's just been like, fuck it. Like, it's been a slow week and I just got to kill somebody. So let me just grab whoever's just on the news this week. Like, so we know that he's been killing petty criminals too. So he'll go into his grab bag anytime he needs to. So nobody's really safe. So I think crime would still exist, but you know, definitely to a lesser extent.
Brennan,
I pretty much agree with Rob. I mean, like, if I'm a parent and my kid's messing up, I wouldn't do it just to be like, oh, yo, you're smoking weed. Like ain't nobody just smoking weed getting this shit. I wouldn't take it that far. But if I happen to have a kid or was around kids that are like on the path to being criminals, bruh, like they're gonna be, I'm gonna be like,
that'll be the real scare straight. All this going to the jails. Yep. Oh no, they ain't that.
Look how empty these jails are. That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah, right.
You would think there'd be a lot of criminals in here that might one day be able to get back out and commit crimes again. But ask all the guys who aren't here. Oh wait, you can't. They're dead. Like, they're all dead. So guess what? You go ahead and do what you're gonna do, because I'm gonna keep on living.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. They can be like, oh well, that's a good point. You know, and to Rob's point on the second point, the second question is like, one of the things that you can never get rid of is like machismo, or in this, the belief that I can get away with this. You know, exactly. Even if I do something bad, I can still get away with it, which goes to what he was saying is like not solving the actual problem that causes crime in the sense of like scarcity and the separation of like, you know, like the wealth gap and like the lack of social services or healthcare.
Yeah.
You know, the things that really push people to the edge, especially people that are good. You know, there's a lot of people in our country right now that have done a lot of bad things, mostly because they can't pay to keep somebody they love alive because our healthcare system costs so much.
Yep.
You know, it's like things like that are common. Those stories don't even mean anything to Americans right now because it's just like, well, yeah, I get it. You know what I'm saying? So that kind of like those kind of systematic issues are going to create criminals on a consistent basis.
Breaking Bad wouldn't work in any other country like on the planet.
Yeah.
That dude would have had free healthcare. He would have been fine.
Yep.
You know?
That's a really good point.
that's a good point you made, Rob, about attacking the symptom. Not the problem, like the actual problem. Reminds me of Big Pharma. Anyway, next question. Who is the person you've been the most competitive with in your life? Brennan?
I got a
we saw a lot of competitiveness with L and Light.
Yep.
And it was great. I loved it up until the end of that right there. So who was the most competitive?
So it may or may not have been mentioned a time or two on this podcast or a time or two in my life that I may or may not be a slightly competitive person sometimes.
From time to time.
From time to time.
I was just at the office with you this past fucking week, and you just said, come on, Pomati, let's get on fucking Smash Brothers and destroy it. And then Brennan lost one, and then once Brennan lost one and he destroyed everybody else again, he made it fucking known.
Yeah.
Talking that shit, what happened? What happened, everybody? Everybody. Hold on a second.
You can't tell that story without giving all the details. When I lost that match, how much shit did all of them talk?
I mean, yeah, they talk shit because you talk shit all the time.
No, but the thing because is, I just want to point out, I do. I own that. I do talk a lot of shit. But all I'm saying is that I won like 4 or 5 matches in a row and I wasn't really talking shit like that. I was just like, yep, got it. We out here. I wasn't like burying them talking shit. I wasn't going hard with the shit talk at all. You know, I was just like, yep, this is what's supposed to happen, you know, kind of thing. Because I am the best player in the office. Like, it's known. But Bomani and the people I play with, they're, you know, and Rob is one of them as well, is like, I wouldn't accept it either. It's like, you can't accept that. Shut up and lose. And so when they did win one, they buried me.
They did.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm like, sure they did.
They buried me. They were talking.
Well deserved, too.
They were talking so much shit. They went to 10. So I was like, okay, well, if we're going to go to 10, don't let me win again. I said it too. I was like, don't let me win again if you're going to talk like this. And I won and I crushed them. And so I crushed them verbally afterwards.
My God.
And then I said, get back to work. Like Keenan said.
And they got back to work.
I bet they did.
But my most person. I have a twin brother, as well as a father who's really competitive, who did a really good job of pitting us up against each other, in literally everything.
Hilarious.
You know, it's like who's he knew from the moment we could walk who could walk faster. I'll tell you that. You know what I'm saying? Like he's that my dad was about that life. And he won't admit it like that. He's like, no, I was never like that. I'm like, Dad, are you kidding me? Look at the product of what I am. And so I'd say the most competitive person I've been competitive with was my brother. But then even like growing up, I also had a best friend, Dan, who just doubled down on that because he was just as competitive as my dad and me and everybody. I've been surrounded by competition my whole life. Like growing up, like I was born in like a arena of competition. And so for me, it's just like I now compete with everybody in some way, shape or form. If they like to compete, and if they don't, I have no problem not competing. But if you like to compete in something that I don't mind competing in, and I'm gonna make it my business to do it. So
he can't even help it, bro.
I love it. He can't. I love it.
As soon as he meets somebody, every time he meets somebody new in the office, we bring somebody by the office, and they say something that he feels like he could compete in, bro. I'll kill you in that.
Yeah,
I'll beat you in that.
He zeroes in on that stuff. I've seen it a million times. Absolutely.
The best part is, and then what happens? Yeah, that's my favorite sound. That's my favorite sound right there. That silence after I say that. Because you don't want to give me any credit. You're going to have like one or two small stories. But for how many instances that y'all have witnessed what you just said, the vast majority of the time, the same shit happens. So go ahead, give your one or two stories. Keenan's going to be like, well, I beat you in this one time. I was like, yeah, but in general. In general, I whoop ass. And y'all know it. Y'all know it. You don't want to say it. I wouldn't say it to me if I was y'all.
First of all, I did not whoop your ass one time Marvin was kept on. I have the up, the clear up. So,
but the thing is, I've also beaten you. And also, I never played on that. Like, we're using an arcade joystick. I never played the game on that.
You're making excuses.
I'm telling the truth.
You're making excuses. The truth could be still an excuse.
I suppose.
Prime example of the competitiveness that Freddie brings out.
Example A.
Yeah, Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I haven't had like a necessarily consistent rival or a competitor. It's kind of changed depending on what the thing is. Maybe part of that is growing up an only child. Like I definitely competed with my dad. Like we'd play basketball or against each other, or whatever. And I remember when I started being able to like win, that was like a thing. Like, oh shit, like I can start making some shots against this guy because he was, you know, he's an adult, like yeah. You know.
Yeah.
But like when I was doing like karate for a while, like I had a couple of students that were around like the same, that came in around the same time about my same age that was like, I was always measuring myself against them. Like, how are they doing? Like we did like tournaments and competitions and stuff. Like how'd they place? How am I going to beat them in like the sparring tournament or whatever? But yeah, I haven't necessarily had like a consistent person that I go up against it in everything or that I'm constantly, maybe. Brennan, definitely in some things, like for sure. There was like a while when Fighter Z came out, like Brennan and I were like fighting.
Yeah, we were going at it for sure. Rob's really good at Z Fighters, by the way.
I lagged off in my training. I've been picking that back up a little bit here and there. I'm really excited to try Roshi out. I haven't tried him yet, but that seems like it's going to be super fun. But
I mean, he's not as good as me, but he's good.
All right, whatever, man. I'd say it's been a mix. It's changed a lot. Sometimes it's myself, you know, just like measuring against myself what I did last time. Can I do better than that? You know, maybe myself is my most consistent rival.
That's like the most noble answer of all time.
Yeah.
Self-betterment plus ultra, you know?
Right.
I would have to say, my brother, I think when you have a sibling, it's hard not to have that.
Yeah.
And I would honestly feel like my brother was the one that was always trying to compete with me. Mm. And it was just like, and even though he's older, it's just like, yeah, I'm gonna beat you at this. And a lot of times I was just like, man, I don't really give a shit. Like, I don't care. Like, so a lot of times, but then it got to a point when it came to basketball, of course, we both played in a basketball, I'm playing on a basketball team. So once I was able to beat him, from time it wasn't like every time I played I beat him, but once I was able to beat him every few times or so, it just like, yeah, the competitiveness goes up because at one point I couldn't beat him at anything. But once you get that one win, you're like, all right, motherfucker, the playing field's even. It's like, no, I beat you 100 times to one time, it's not even yet. And in my head I was like, yes it is. I don't really necessarily, like, I also know my limits. Like, when I play Smash Brothers with Brennan, I don't go in there talking shit. Like, I'm not there yet.
Right.
I go in there, I got murdered on Wednesday when I played with them. First went out every time.
You got better, though. You were learning.
I was learning, but yeah, and I've been playing a little bit here just to grind out to get new players, so I'm getting a little bit better, but I would say right now, my brother probably still the most competitive person, and I would probably say Brennan might be a close second.
Yeah, I can see that.
I'm around him a good amount, but like, besides that, yeah, like, one person I never wanted to compete with, and maybe y'all can, if y'all want to answer this too, a second part to it, is like my lady. I never wanted to compete against any woman that I was ever with. And I see that a lot of times in relationships, there's always a competition in relationships. Especially since my lady and I are in pretty much in the same field. I never want to compete because I understand also too, that can just destroy relationships. Yeah. I feel like Brennan would be like, I'm competing against my woman. I feel like
me?
Brennan definitely would. If they were both like producers, be like, well, my thing was actually better than yours. I mean, you produced a good comedy special, but we produced the best comedy special that sold way more than yours. So,
I could see that a little bit.
Brennan, what do you say to that answer?
I'd say I would never bring competition to a relationship. And I mean that. Now, I know that sounds crazy, but I would never bring it. You know, in the sense of, because the thing is, most of the times, the things that I like to compete in are things that most just men like to do. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, there's not many women I've ever met that are super competitive in video games. Like, that's not a sexist statement. That's just the truth. You know, it's like, women don't play video games like men do. And even when they do, they play different types of video games than we do. You know, so it's just like that's my thing. Video games is my thing. So then sports, it's like, I'm injured. I can't really do that anyway. So it's like, we're playing something like we do go-kart racing or something like that. I'm going to win for sure, but I'm not going to like talk shit or bury you. You know, I'm not going to slow down just to ride next to you either. Like,
what if they bring it to you? So what if you had a lady and she brought it to you? Like,
talking shit? Oh, yeah. I'm a wrecker. Like,
you're not going to be like, all right, babe, you can have, like, you're not going to play the whole, you're going to be like, you're going to go in.
I'm going to give. The thing is, I feel like if I bring something to you, if I bring something to you, I want to compete with you in something. I want you to give me 110% of what you got, And if I'm doing, and if you bring something to me because you want to compete with me in something, I'm going to do the same. You know, so it's not about saying, let me bury you and just say I'm better than you as a human being. It's more so like, you asked for this, so you get it.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're dating me, you know me. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know me. You can't bring a competition to me and expect me to be like, oh, it means nothing. Let's just have fun. Like, no, I'm going to do my best to beat you. And if you win, I'm going to give you props. As I always do, as Rob and Keenan will say, is if you beat me, I will admit it when you say it somewhere else, and I will give you props when you do it, and shake your hand every time.
When I was whipping his ass, Marvel vs. Capcom, it took him like 7 matches after I beat him. Then he's kind of like, all right, you're pretty good.
But I did it. Yeah.
But that first 2 or 3 times, he still was like, these are luck in his head. Whatever he was saying in his head, that was luck him.
I was saying in my head was the thing. I was like, I'm not going to make the excuse. Because like, you're right. What I said earlier was an excuse. It's the truth, but I'm just like, I can't use this fucking controller. And so I was just really mad about the controller. That's really what was going on in my head. I was like, fuck this controller, fuck joysticks. This is the dumbest shit ever.
It's an arcade at your company that you have access to more than anybody.
The funniest part is I didn't even know that game was on that system until you showed me. Because you came in.
I can't comment on that.
That might be true. I was like, that might be true. Because I remember the story, Keenan. You came in and I was like, yo, this has pretty much every arcade game ever. You were like, does it have Marvel vs. Capcom? And I was like, I've never looked.
You found it. And then
I found it.
Sure enough, it did.
We're back in the even playing field.
Yeah, and you're the only person that'll play me, Keenan. Nobody else will even play me. And the computer sucks in that game. So there's no way I can even train at it. So I'm just like, whatever. I don't care. Like, Keenan's better than me at this stupid arcade game. Let's get on some sticks and see what the real story is.
Yeah.
Rob?
Yeah. You're talking about competitiveness in relationships.
I was waiting for Rob's answer here.
Yeah, no, there's...
You know I was waiting for your answer.
Yeah, so I don't know if she could hear me. She might.
That's exactly what I was waiting for.
Oh, Rob would do it? Rob would be competitive?
No, you don't know. You don't know. I'm not going to speak on it, but you don't know, Keenan. You don't know.
Because, like, if you ever meet Andre, like, especially, like, you're meeting somebody for the first time, she's very quiet, like, just, like, very super nice, super sweet. But, like, if you get into a game with her, she will tear your head off. She will kill you. She gets very competitive about that. Like, I will tell you about one, like, for the most part, we play games together. Like, it's co-op stuff. We have a good time. Because she knows, like, she's just like, if you beat me, I'll get mad. And it was,
yeah.
But we have a standing, like, kind of rivalry. If you've been to Disneyland or Disney World, like, they have these, like, they've got, like, these two Toy Story games. One of them's, like, a laser tag game, and one of them's, like, this, like, kind of carnival ride game where you go through and, like, do these different games on, like virtual reality or augmented reality, like, 3D things. Anyway, on, like, the boardwalk game, she beats me every time. Every time. Every time. And, like, and it's the opposite on the Buzz Lightyear game. The Buzz Lightyear game, I get her every time. And so there's only been one time that we've beaten each other at the other one's game, and we were sure to let the other one know about it. But I don't know how she does it on that boardwalk game. Every time, like, the first two rounds, like, all right, I've got, like, a good lead. And then, like, by the third installment, she just, like, pulls away, and it's just, like, I can't. She'll finish with, like, 100,000 more points than me. I don't know how she does it. It's rigged.
Hilarious. And I was more saying in a sense of competitiveness, I guess, and in career wise and games, of course. No, like when we bowl, and like we every time we go, but we love to go bowling. When we go bowling, I'm like, I'm whooping your ass. Like,
in all honesty, like, this might come as a surprise to you guys. Maybe not Rob. I think Rob knows me as, like, a human being really well because of, like, how much shit we've been through together.
Definitely.
But, like, I'm an intensely competitive person about things that really don't matter. Like, about, like, video games and board games and talking shit or whatever. But, like, when it comes to, like, career, life stuff and all that kind of stuff, that to me is not a competition. That's all subjectively what it is that you want. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, what do I want? Like, yeah, we might be in the same, like, in the same industry, but we're not in the same space in that same industry.
Yeah.
Like, you can't really judge my shit against yours because it's a whole different way to, like, it's really hard to put that. It's like, it's comparing apples to peas. You know, so I hate the saying apples to oranges, but it's like, hey, it's like comparing apples to peas. It's like, they're both food, but, you know, like, you don't put them on a plate together, you know?
Yeah.
So, next question. Would you have given away the notebook to save somebody close to you? And here's the thing, knowing that you're going to give the notebook to somebody who's a criminal or whatever the case may be, is saving one person's life that's important to you better than saving 100,000 lives or millions of lives? This was a tough question that I don't even know if I fully have the answer to yet, but I don't truly know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can live with myself if I let somebody die that's close to me just to save the rest of the world. I guess I would live with that, but I feel like I feel like that would be one of the most selfish things in the world to do, is to, like, all right, I got my best friend. Who's to say that? But who's to say that my brother, or who's to say that somebody else isn't gonna get killed by fucking Kiriska?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? At some other point. So that is, I don't know. I'll leave it up to y'all, because I really honestly, it'd be tough. But go ahead, Brennan.
I think there's more variables to it than that. For me, I think it really comes down to also one other variable to add to it is also, like, who knows? And the reason I say that is because, like, if it's somebody close to me, that's a really hard choice to make. But if this is on the world stage, and then everybody knows that somebody that I really care about sacrificed their life to save all of theirs, then I was like, okay, I can effectively honor this person's memory and give them a legacy that can last forever now. If that's the thing, it's like, yo, if it's my brother, my daughter, or whoever it is, it's like, yo, you have affected and changed these people's lives, and they all know about it, and we can build off of that forever. It's like, for me, if you had to put that against me, it's like, I'm the person that might get killed. You're like, but if you die, you'll not only save all these people's lives, you'll help inspire people, make them all better, and whatever kind of things. I'm like, yeah, I should probably die. You know what I'm saying?
Not you. I'm not letting you get out of it.
I get what you're saying, but but my point being is that the type of person that I am is I would want the person close to me to not choose me in that sentence. If it's something that we can turn into helping other people, I wouldn't want you to choose me. I would die.
What if that person's kind of like, bro, I don't want to die, bro. I fuck all that. That's what I'm saying. It's like, bro, they're not like you. Because I'm with you, too. I'm like, yo, I would take the sacrifice so that everybody can survive. But I ain't going to lie to you. Give me some love, man.
Yeah.
Give me some love,
that's what
man,
I'm saying.
About
it's
that
like,
shit.
It's like, yo, this foundation's going to be named after, you know, this kind of stuff. Like, I'm still not wanting to die. But I'd be like, at least generations of kids are going to see statues of me and know my name. Like, I get it. You know, I don't know how I would achieve that otherwise, you know?
Brennan's statue will be just like this, too.
Yeah, what's the saying?
Hold a video game controller.
You're planting trees under which you'll never sit in the shade of, or something like that, you know? That's
yeah,
truly honor.
Like that.
No, but I'm saying, so what if that person didn't want to die, so you had to make that choice?
I'd say the second question I would ask to that, a clarification session, is how close are they to me? Is this like my girlfriend? My daughter? I don't know what that's like. I don't have any kids. But from what I see from how other people act when they have parents, I'd probably say my kid. You know, when they have kids, when people have kids, like it seems like the parental response is to save your child. If it's my girlfriend, a significant other, I don't know. If it's my parent, I don't know. Like they've had a good run. You know what I'm saying? Like I don't know.
That's tough.
It depends on who it is. It really depends on who it is.
Right. I mean, I see a lot of what Brennan's saying here. Where I'm just like, I could totally get why Yagami did it. Like, you know, that's his daughter in there. Like, that's your daughter. Like, I think your parental instincts kick in at that point, and it's like anything to save my child. I got to imagine if I were put in that situation, it were my child. Like, absolutely. So I think there's some truth to that being like, you know, there's some nuance to this answer. Like, who is it? You know, it would be really hard for me to not give the notebook over if it was somebody that was part of my family or somebody really close to me.
What if it was me, Rob?
Ah, Brennan.
You just
told me that you were like
before you knew that.
That'd be tough, man. That'd be tough. I might.
Because I work with Rob, and Rob is legit one of my best friends. So it's
let me tell you something. That office would be really quiet.
It would be much quieter. It would be a much quieter office. I mean, since I do know you real well, Brennan, I think you would want to, you know, make the noble sacrifice. I wouldn't give up the notebook. I'd say, no, this isn't what Brennan would have wanted.
Yeah, I feel like Rob would be like, Brennan, come in, let me talk to you for a second. Bring you to the office, and he'll be writing your name down here. How do you want to die?
I know, like, I would just be like, all right, give us a notebook, or we're going to kill Brennan. I'd be like, and then he died peacefully in his sleep, you know?
Yeah. Or Brennan died smashing.
Yeah.
Brennan died, however you wanted to die, Brennan, it's your choice.
Heart attack mid-smash.
I'm captured with a bunch of criminals, so I don't think that are impossible. I feel like Brennan peacefully went to sleep and died with a smile on his face. Like, all
right,
cool.
Right. Something like that. Yeah. Make it just nice and easy.
While flicking off the attackers.
Yeah. Just like, Yeah.
All right. Next question. So has absolute victory ever been bittersweet in a heated competition for you? As we saw with L and Light, L dying. But you could tell Light feels this type of way, and kind of just like, I feel like it was like a Batman Joker thing. It's like, that's why Batman won't ever kill the Joker. And vice versa, because it's like, I need you for my world to be
you complete.
Yeah. For real.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, have you ever had that moment like that, Brennan?
Man, fuck Daniel Terry Wright is how I will start this story, because that is like my best friend growing up, and fuck him, because we had a competition, Marvel vs. Capcom 2, and we used to play that a lot, and he was good. He's very good at that game, and we had a bunch of group of friends that played, and he and I were the two best. We were the two best out of everybody, and we'd go back and forth, whatever, and then like, one day, one of our friends was like, yo, like, who's actually better between the two of you? And then Dan was like, well, it's me, of course. And I was like, Dan, I beat you way more than you beat me, bro. Like, it's like 2/3. Like, you definitely beat me, but it's like 2/3. It's not even close, man. Like, it's not. And he was just like, that's bullshit. And like, it became so heated that we started a competition and said, okay, fuck it. We'll see who's better by percentage, in the sense of, we're going to play to see whoever gets 100 wins first, no matter how long it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And
shit.
This petty asshole, When it got to like 84 to like 35, when I had 84 wins and 35, he stretched out those last 16 games over like 3 years. Like, he just wouldn't play me. Wouldn't play me anymore. Like, I come like, oh shit, man, my PlayStation's like packed away. He always had an excuse. I'm like, you's a bitch. Like, bro.
Like, that isn't gonna take 30 seconds to set up. Like, you got the cables. Bust it out, man.
And so he was just petty about it, because the reason he was petty is because the bet was whoever loses has to hand build a trophy and present it to the other person on camera and admit that they're better. Which, by the way, it sounds like a bet I would make up. It's a bet he made up. He's the one who taught me how to be petty like that. I learned that from him. So
where's this video at?
Actually, I have it. I have the video, and I still have the trophy, of course. It's at my parents' house back home. And yeah, like I have it. But the thing is, it's like it was so unsatisfying because he gave me the trophy. He's like, here you go. Yeah, Brennan's the greatest, and just walked off. I'm just like, I hate you. You like, you know this satisfaction. I deserve this satisfaction. You're just being a petty hoe. But I will say, he put time into that trophy. The trophy is amazing. He actually made a commemoration to all the characters that I played. So it was like, you have a team of three, and he actually, the trophy actually had, like, he went and bought like figurines of each one of those and made them into a trophy, you know, made them into that, and then had like a background that actually reflected how I won kind of thing. So it was pretty cool.
That's cool.
I was like, the trophy is worth it for sure, but this video is trash and your attitude is ridiculous.
Rob?
I mean, I don't know that I've had that kind of bittersweet victory. I've been trying to think of a story over here, something I can like sort of bring that. I don't know that I've had, I just don't know that it's been that way. Like luckily my wins have been justified. My losses justified.
I feel like we played a board game before, you had some bittersweet victories.
Probably.
Like when we played like those big board games.
I guess I'll say that. Like we played, and Brennan's played this with me a couple times, what's it called? Eldritch Horror, which is like, it's a fun game. It takes a long ass time. Like each person plays like an individual, like investigator, and you're like solving mysteries around the world. Like trying, it's kind of like, if like Lovecraft Country a little bit was like a board game, something like that, where like there's all these individual stories happening. You're trying to stop all this cult activity, so like these old gods don't invade our world. Anyway, it often involves somebody basically having to sacrifice themselves so that the rest of the team like can get victory like in their memory. And I've definitely had to be that guy sometimes, like jumping on the grenade, like, all right, I'm going to go fight this monster. I have no fucking chance of winning against just because somebody's got to do this thing, you know? And so I sacrificed myself a couple times so the team can take home the win. That's probably it. Yeah, board games can be...
It's never fun. It's never fun to be that guy.
It's tough. It's tough to be the one to lay your life down in the board game. But if you play those big, long board games like I do and Brennan is sometimes done with me, it happens. They are mean and they take lives.
Keenan?
I don't know. I feel like... I don't know. The first time I ever beat my brother one-on-one, I felt so good. But then he hit me with the, I let you win.
Ooh.
I didn't
play
that.
Man, fuck your brother, bro. Your brother, like your brother's an asshole.
It was like that whole, I didn't play that hard. I didn't go all out. So it was like, if it was like a bittersweet, like I won, but did I really win? And then we played again and I didn't beat him for like a while after that. So it was like, was he telling the truth? Then I eventually beat him more times after that. But at that, I remember just being like, damn, like, I guess maybe he wasn't playing as hard, man. Like my brother's normally a good shot blocker. He didn't block that many shots. He did, I had a nice jumper. And I was like the first 5 buckets, I was just lighting his ass up and he wasn't putting a hand up. So it was like, did he just spot me kind of like 5 points or some shit like that? So, I mean, eventually once it got that I was able to beat him more times and it was different. And I will say this second one real quick. I guess beating Brennan at poker, but not actually being there. And I know Brennan hates
this shit. Oh man!
But you know, giving my money to Tony Valentino to finish off the games, and Brennan pretty much being me. Like just to let you guys know to give a little bit more context, this is how heated this shit got. Brennan and I were filming a podcast one time, the animation podcast, and it got so heated we had to stop the podcast.
Yeah, we had to cut it out. It was like one of our first episodes.
We had to cut all of that fucking dialogue if we were going in on each other.
You were. I remember that. Because I was there for both the game and when the podcast was recorded. That was...
Rob was there for both. So, you know, Brennan is still to this day does not... I think Brennan fucks with me, but on that spectrum... He would never fully fuck with me because he feels the type of way about that. And I want some money, so I feel good.
I mean, bringing up Marvel versus Capcom, this poker game, it's like you are trying to like hit all Brennan's pain points, like based on your personal history.
I would love to trigger Brennan. I would love to trigger. You see what's funny? He's had his moments with Ice, so he doesn't get triggered as much anymore. Because Ice would trigger Brennan at times. Brennan right now, I think he's playing video games at the same time we're doing the podcast. Yes, it's kind of just like, I'm not going to let it bother me fully. Go fuck yourself.
So here's my hands, not playing video games. I have nothing to say to that.
I bet you don't.
because I'm just gonna get mad. So I'm just gonna get mad. And just, I don't want to be mad right now.
We're just gonna move on.
We have to cut this portion of the podcast out again because we'll be going at it again.
Moving on.
All right. All right. Next question. Last question, actually. So the Yagami family is falling apart. Do you think that Light is properly being punished for using the Death Note like Ryu set up to be from the beginning? Rob?
It's a good fucking question.
I'm going to say no, because I don't think he gives a fuck about his family. And I'm watching like his sister being wheeled around in the wheelchair while his dad watches from the porch. Where's Light? Light's not there because he doesn't give a fuck.
You mean Mom? Mom watches from the porch. Dad's dead. Yeah.
No, because it was earlier. It was right after she got back from the kidnapping. Oh, okay, Mom was, you know, taking her through the garden, and Yagami's just like, fuck, like, what just happened to my daughter? And Light is nowhere to be seen. And even so, like, after his dad's death, like, he's not comforting his mom. He's not calling her on the phone, just being like, hey, Mom, how you holding up? Anytime he's, like, thought about this, he's, like, looking himself in the mirror like, damn, I'm really going to have to kill my sister. Or, like, damn, in a couple weeks, like, I'm really going to have to kill my dad. And he doesn't really seem to be affected by it. I don't think that at this point, I don't think he's been punished properly. I think he has absolutely been just like, he's so selfish. He doesn't care about anybody but himself. I don't think he's really feeling the pain of this. If anything, he's still just like, how can I think my way out of this? And maybe at the end of this, he'll find how alone he's made himself. And that will be the moment it clicks. But so far, I don't think he's feeling it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't even know if he's punishable.
That's tough.
At this point.
Yeah.
At this point, I don't know if he's punishable. I think he's such, I think the right word is a sociopath, that I don't think he even fucking cares about. I think he feels like, up to this point, I fucking won.
Yeah.
Like, I've won, and I won't be surprised if he has shit planned for if anything ever happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is how smart this kid is. He's a mastermind. At the end of the day, as much as we might not like him for him being a dickhead and an asshole, he's one of the greatest masterminds in all of anime.
Yeah.
Probably in all of that we've seen of most shows.
Yeah.
He's always gotten this shit done.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's even punishable at this point. Brennan?
You know, it's funny. At first, I was going to say, yeah, he's being punished because everything around him is crumbling, but he's never given a fuck about anything around him. So, yeah, that's actually a hard question. I don't think he's being finished. I don't know. Like, I can't speak to it because I know what happens. But I will say, up until this point, I fully agree with Rob that, yes, he's being punished, but is it truly a punishment? You know what I'm saying? I'd say 20% of that cry he did on his dad's deathbed was because he's going to miss his dad. But he's not going to, because he doesn't really value or have empathy towards human life in general.
Yeah, that's a forgiving number, 20%.
I think so. You know, but yeah. Like, I don't know. He hasn't shown any real affection towards anyone ever on this show.
No.
Well, yes, he has.
Who?
He could have killed his sister. He could have killed her. And he even said it. Remember, he goes, I can't do it. I can't do this.
He does like his sister. Now his sister's in a wheelchair. Because remember in the first few episodes, like, he was actually happy to help, even after he got the Death Note, happy to help his sister with her homework.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I'm just like, yeah, he does have that, like, and I know that's a big thing in, like, a lot of cultures, is to, like, be the big brother kind of thing. And, like, so
absolutely.
I think that actually means something to him. So maybe that, but even still, she ain't dead.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think that he
did say he couldn't. That do was it. That's right.
Yeah, he said, he's like, I can't do this. And that's that. When I remember seeing that part on here, I was like, I forgot about that. I was like, I gotta respect him, because I was like, he's doing this shit.
Yeah.
Or you gonna be like, or something's gonna happen? Like, oh, I was gonna write this bitch name, but they did it for me. Fuck it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I feel like he was just gonna be like, fuck it. But. Yeah, I think there's something there. I think there's probably like a 1% hang on that he has some type of sympathy and empathy and just love for people left. Like a fraction of a percent, I would say. Out of all that.
I didn't submit this question. Maybe I should have. Like, who do you think has less emotion, Light or the dude from Parasite? Like, towards the end of the series when he's like fully merged with Migi. Was it Shinichi was his name?
Oh, wow. That's a good question, actually. I'm gonna stick with Light, man, because...
Yeah.
Shinichi still, like... He liked his girlfriend.
That's true. I still don't think Light is feeling Misa. He's just like, yeah, whatever. Like, pack your bags. I need you for your eyes. Like,
Bro, the fact that, remember, he said he wasn't going to do this, but this motherfucker has been living with her for years.
Yeah.
This is, he's committed to this shit now.
He is. I'm surprised he's still alive, actually, but we'll see.
Very shocked, yeah. So, yeah, that's the end of the question portion. So let's get into our favorite parts, our least favorite parts. You want to go first, Brennan, since you haven't been here for a few weeks?
Well, my least favorite part was definitely the dad dying. No, wait, no. Holy shit. Well, two people dying. My least favorite part was L dying all day.
Of course.
Yeah.
L dying was definitely my least favorite part because I really liked L. And I also really didn't like his dad dying, but obviously I'd rather have his dad die than L. So that's my least favorite part. But I did also, I was a little bit emotional when his dad died just for the way that they did it. It was pretty sad. My favorite part was the getting the death note that Mello did, the way Mello got the death note. That was incredible. Like how every single thing was thought of and just like the meticulous detail taken to everything. It was just like, that's incredible. Like absolutely incredible. And I support it.
What's your score?
I'm going to say, normally I was giving this show around, what, 7,400 or something like that?
Yeah.
I'm going to give those last few episodes about a 7,600. I really enjoyed that. Like, a lot has happened. You really look at how hard Rob had to work to do that. A lot happened. None of it was boring. None of it was boring. All of it was intense. And I don't, like, these writers, bro, they deserve rewards. Because it's like, how do you, okay, you're going to top, how are you going to, okay, you topped it again. Cool, cool, cool. We're here now. So, yeah, 76, 78, somewhere in there.
76, yeah. I agree. I think I was when I first saw the show, I was nervous after L died how they were going to do anything, how it was going to even continue, and was I going to even enjoy this. And when they brought in the other characters, I thought they were just going to kind of like rehash the same easy, quick story real quick and just be like, all right, man, it is, you know, this is just like a writer save type thing to end this stupid ass show. But no, I think they did things right. I don't have a least favorite in these stretches in it. And I know what you're saying, the least favorite part of people dying, but I mean, from a writing standpoint, the way it's done, it kept me on the edge of my seat. So I love that. So I love it for that part. I don't like them dying because of course you want that cat and mouse game and then his dad having to die and give up get the eyes. That shit all sucked, but that's just great fucking writing to me. I can't say I had necessarily a favorite part, and I know that might be kind of like a easy scapegoat that I'm kind of going for, but this is how I feel, honestly. I think these were the best stretches of the show so far. There was no part that was missing a beat to me. I love every piece of it, from L dying to the new people coming in and bringing their stuff in there, and now they're coming after this guy, and we don't know what's going to happen. So I got to give it an 8,000. Out of these, for these six.
Nice.
Rob?
I think it's been an interesting stretch of episodes. And yeah, I was absolutely shocked by L's death, but I think it's an interesting thing. I appreciate that the show's brave enough to kind of let Light win. And the idea, I think it's interesting that it's not just about him getting to that place, but now that he's gotten to that place, he has to defend it. And that's a sort of interesting way for him to kind of address his character. Can he hang on to this world that he's created in the 5 years since L's death? And I think that's sort of a surprising direction that I didn't think they were going to take it in. So I would say it was a good stretch of episodes. Definitely, I like that we're back on this dynamic, that we've moved on from the Atsuba group. I'm glad that that's kind of in the past because that's definitely felt like a lull for me. I would say my least favorite part isn't necessarily a least favorite part as much as it's just like, fuck, I wish it had gone differently, is also when Yagami was dying. I don't know that I wanted him to be spared that information that Light isn't Kira, you know, that he couldn't, since he could see his lifespan, you know, he's just like, oh, well, you know, my son, at least I know that you're not the killer. And, you know, Ryu commented that, you know, because he never used the notebook, you know, he technically wasn't punished, right? Like he didn't know that same misery because he didn't use the notebook or whatever. And
great line by Reed. Yeah.
And yeah, and the reason that that's my least favorite part is because damn, I wish Light doesn't deserve that. you know, like maybe his dad does. I'm glad he got that piece, but I wish his dad, for as much as that he wanted to know the truth about things, I wish he got to see what a piece of shit his son was and be like, fuck, like, because he was at the end was just like, you know, I'm proud of you. And like, Light doesn't deserve that. So that's my least favorite part. My favorite part, I don't know, this is going to be a little off the wall because, you know, obviously it was, there's a lot of things happening that were exciting and blah, blah, blah. But I really got a kick out of seeing them come to the States and how they kind of like, you know, interpreted it, the American influence on this story and like having the American FBI agents come in and like talk about like, oh man, the Americans are cowards. Like, you know, like it's just the way they see us is like, oh man, they're backing down. Like the fact that Light was even just like, I got even the Americans to bend to my will. That was just sort of interesting to see. Yeah. I always get a kick out of seeing how they portray us. Like I remember on Samurai Champloo when they had the Americans show up and I think they had like, Japanese people doing the English voices. It was, and they, we were complete assholes in that episode. I was like, I mean, I get it.
we are here.
Yeah, totally. You know, we, with things going the way they are, we're pretty shit. But, as far as my score for these episodes, like I said, maybe things will shake out differently. I'm really bummed Light or that L, you know, went down and he might not be the one that brings, that brings Light to justice, though he certainly put things into motion that could make that happen. My score's been going down recently. This one's going to bring it back up. I'm going to bring it up to a 7,200 for this week.
Okay.
Ice didn't give his scores, so we don't know what he thinks. But hey, what do you guys think out there, world? These last episodes, 25 through 30. Give us your score out of a 9,000. Always answer the questions in the comment section. This was a very intense last five right here. We got seven more. These last stretches of seven. Please don't jump in the comment section if you've already seen it and spoil anything yet. Because you know Rob still hasn't seen it, even though Brennan and I have. And yeah, let us know in the comment section what you guys think. Answer the questions. You want to drop your stuff, guys?
Mr. Producer Face on Venmo and the Gram.
Yeah, I'm RV Danger on Instagram. You can find me there, message me there, tell us what you think of the show.
I'm Keenan Baker on every single thing. Ice is ice.mcgowan on every single thing. Also, yeah, I was cashed at $40 at one point, so I don't know if you want me to give that to the crew or what you want me to do.
Nah, man, it was sent to you. It's all you.
It was for the podcast.
Oh, well, I still say it's for you.
Put it towards something. We'll, you know,
buy something pretty.
Yeah. Put it in an investment account. We'll save it up, save our pennies, maybe make some stickers at some point or something.
All right, you guys. Also, don't forget and don't ever forget this. This is the greatest fucking anime podcast of our life.
All right. That's it.
Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Animation. We out.
And so anime was solved forever.